If you and your team want to cut down on busy work and get more choice and control over accounts payable, you need BILL. BILL Accounts Payable is your secret weapon for saving time on AP. And with a special offer at bill.com/podcast, you'll save money too. With BILL, streamline your entire AP process, including bill creation, approvals, and payments. You can pay with ACH, credit card, check, and international wire transfer. Plus, you can easily integrate with most accounting software. No wonder hundreds of thousands of businesses are already using BILL to manage their AP. Schedule a free demo now to see how BILL can automate your financial operations. And right now, get 15% off when you subscribe to BILL Accounts Payable. There's never been a better time to sign up. This special offer is available for a limited time only at bill.com/podcast. Terms apply. See bill.com/podcast for details.
Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise, and with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
Did you see that Nokia is coming out with like a new old phone, like a non-smartphone?
No, I didn't see it.
And literally all you can do is call, text, and play Snake.
Oh, I can. Snake is back. These skills won't go to waste, baby. I'm quick with my thumbs.
It's kind of hot, honestly. What the fuck is Snake, though? I didn't know what that meant when I watched the ad.
Literally a snake that gets bigger and bigger as you like eat little dots on the screen. And it's all about like how quick can you turn to get the little dot. It's been 20 years since I've played that game.
What was the BlackBerry game that I really liked that one? I believe it was called BrickBerry, but that also just doesn't sound right.
I never played it.
Brick Breaker.
What was that like?
Aim a ball to hit bricks, and some bricks would get broken after being hit once, and some would be stronger and would need to be hit a few times. That's pretty much it. And some bricks were unbreakable. So.
But now... Yeah, these old phones are coming back because people realize that they're too connected and they need to be unconnected without going into a remote area of the woods. They need an old ass Nokia phone so they can just text or call and that's it.
I like it. I hope this takes off.
I have some friends and they have two phones. They leave the smartphone at home so they can like post on Instagram and stuff and do all the bullshit. And then when they go out, they want to feel a little less bombarded by social media. So they just take the flip phone.
That's nice. So you have two phones.
Yeah, you got to get two.
So if you don't have the self-control to just not check social media, you need to literally leave social media at home in order to go out.
Or you get a lockbox or you get somebody to just like whip you.
Yeah, the price for that's a little higher. Anyway.
Well, welcome back to our tech podcast. We've become complete Luddites.
Yeah, welcome to Cargo Cult. You know, we talk a lot about innovation on this show.
We do talk a lot about innovation.
And so for that reason, I just want to mention Taco Bell has a new Crunchwrap with a Cheez-It inside.
This looks like a regular Crunchwrap, right?
Oh, it's not. That is a Cheez-It inside. 16 times the size of a regular Cheez-It, I present to you the Cheez-It Crunchwrap.
I did see this because like there was... news about the Trump trial, you know, Trump convicted, blah, blah, blah. And then it was like MSNBC. They're like, you know, drinking champagne and popping bottles and talking about the Trump trial. CNN, blah, blah, blah. And then you go to Fox News and they're like, new Taco Bell items.
Wait, really? Prime time?
Prime time. And Taco Bell did announce that they are an AI first company. So,
wait,
kind
what?
Of related.
What does that mean? What does that mean, yep. Naomi?
I really don't know what that means. It could be that they're, you know, using it to monitor workers, like we've covered before, like Dairy Queen was using. Like, we've seen a 10% uptick in sales.
Okay, I got an article here. Taco Bell, Pizza Hut going AI first with fast food innovations. Here's a quote from Yum Brands' new chief digital and technology officer. Our vision is that an AI-first mentality works every step of the way. If you think about the major journeys within a restaurant that can be AI-powered, we believe it's endless. Artificial intelligence shapes nearly every aspect of how its Taco Bell, Pizza Hut, KFC, and Habitat Burger Grill restaurants are run. Who the fuck is Habitat Burger Grill?
We just have more questions. We're not getting to the bottom of this.
In May, our nation had its first ever AI Expo for national competitiveness, which is really a nice way of saying war.
This is the first inaugural AI Expo for national competitiveness. What a year to have it.
The event was designed for people to, quote, dive into meaningful dialogues with experts and enthusiasts alike, all with a shared vision to solidify the United States position as the leader in critical emerging technologies.
Yeah. You can hear the bald eagle.
And Palantir, friend of the show, was its main sponsor. So the event ended up being what Yahoo News called a celebration of the renewed romance between Silicon Valley and the Pentagon.
It was like an anniversary, a celebration of this coupling of Silicon Valley and the national security state, for sure.
And Palantir was the main sponsor, but it was also sponsored in part by Microsoft, Google, Rhombus. There's a blast from your third grade class.
Yeah, Rhombus.
Do you remember what a rhombus is?
I know what a rhombus is. Four-sided figure, not necessarily a square.
Hell yeah. Parallelogram, all four sides are equal. But anyway, it was sponsored in part by Palantir, Microsoft, Google, Rhombus, and many other tech companies. AWS, GE, Lockheed Martin, Booz Allen Hamilton.
And it wasn't sponsored by, but OpenAI was there, Anthropic AI. All the AI companies were there.
If you were some tech company that has a role in national competitiveness or, you know, military weaponry or intelligence or anything like that, you could get an exhibit. And I looked at the like map for the expo online and you could like see where all the booths are. You know, DARPA had a booth, Google, Meta, Microsoft, Lockheed Martin, right? They all had booths. There were several different State Department exhibits. We also had the U.S. Marine Corps, the U.S. Space Force. The Guardian reporter that went there described it this way, quote, "The conference hall was filled with booths representing the U.S. military and dozens of its contractors, ranging from Booz Allen Hamilton to a random company that was described to me as an Uber for airplane software."
Which is like, what is an Uber for airplane software? Make sure you look at the side of the aircraft to make sure it's your vehicle before you step inside.
Whenever you vape on the show, it sounds so appetizing. It makes me want to vape.
Oh, no.
It's like... What if smoking is like all a big prank? There's nothing even in there. And you just feel better because you're taking a deep breath for once in your life.
I have thought about that. I'm like, I'm probably just... I just like vaping because it relaxes me because I'm taking big yogic deep breaths.
Anyway, back to the AI Warfare Expo. Here's another quote from that Guardian reporter that went to the expo and explored the Palantir booth there. Quote, "In Palantir's main booth, I tried on a VR headset to test Palantir's new augmented reality tool for soldiers. I was told I'd be able to direct a truck or drone while continuing to see the world around me. But when I put on the headset, my field of vision became shaky and out of focus. It reminded me of the goggles they made us wear during DARE anti-drug programs in middle school meant to simulate being drunk.
Later in the article, the Palantir guy was like, oh no, the goggles need to fit your face exactly. That's why it didn't work for you. You need like custom goggles.
Yeah, it's the same thing as like the Vision Pro stuff. Like it needs to calibrate to your face. You can't just like take off your headset and give it to a friend and be like, oh, now you look at this. Like they need their own calibration processed because everyone's eyes are in different places or whatever.
Pupillary distance.
So this event was hosted by the Special Competitive Studies Project. This is a think tank run by Eric Schmidt, former CEO of Google, that we've talked about a bunch already.
He was like the adult brought on, and they brought him to Burning Man and anointed him CEO of Google. He was the suit that made it official.
Yeah, so he was CEO from like 2001 to 2011. He was also the executive chairman of Google, and then its like parent company, its successor, until 2017. And also, as I've mentioned probably way too many times, he is the co-author of that book, The Age of AI and Our Human Future, with none other than the late Henry Kissinger. So anyway, so Schmidt has this think tank called the Special Competitive Studies Project. This is inspired, according to him, by the Rockefeller Special Studies Project, which was launched in the 50s by Nelson Rockefeller and then led by Henry Kissinger. And this is the think tank that hosted the AI Expo in May.
So Eric Schmidt, besides having this think tank, he's also up to some other stuff. He has a little startup called White Stork that's supposedly making kamikaze drones. And these are just cheaper drones that explode on arrival, basically deliver a grenade the way a stork delivers a baby. Also, the stork is the national bird of Ukraine. So kamikaze refers to the Japanese pilots in World War II who would, willingly go to their death by, you know, slamming into something the way that they attacked on Pearl Harbor. It's like a suicide mission. But the funny thing about calling a drone that is that it's not manned. So you have no, it's just, you're saying it's a disposable piece of equipment. That's all you're saying. You're like, it's a piece of crap. You can only use it once.
That's it. But they're making the cheapness of it an asset.
Yeah. By calling it kamikaze.
So this is like technically under wraps, but everyone's still talks about it in military and AI circles, right? Forbes wrote an article titled, "The former Google CEO has been quietly working on a military startup called White Stork. White Stork has become an open secret in the drone community." That's so nice. Everyone needs a community. Community is so important.
Yeah, there is a proliferation of startups that just have drones that like slam into things. This is what they think the future of warfare is going to be. It's just going to be swarms of drones smashing into each other.
So White Stork, Eric Schmidt's secret drone company, is supposed to use AI for visual targeting. And so we don't really know a ton about the inner workings of the company, but we do know that the company was formally established last August, according to two sources that spoke to the Wall Street Journal. Oh, no, that spoke to Forbes.
It's not kamikaze. I'm not going to let them. You can make a kamikaze sushi roll, but not kamikaze drone.
We're probably not supposed to say that word at all. I'm googling kamikaze problematic. Just
it's appropriation.
Anyway, back to the AI Warfare Expo. Let's take a look at the opening video. It's in a 10-hour stream, so give me 1 second.
Yeah, just give her 1 second to go through the 10-hour stream.
It has been said that the only way to discover the limits of the possible is to go beyond them.
What a deep voice. Ooh. Really commanding my respect instantly.
Is to focus your energy, not fighting the old, but building on the new. The United States has always been at the forefront of innovation, and the Special Competitive Studies Project is proud to carry that torch forward. We're more than an organization. It's a
beacon. We're a family. The best of us. Sorry. Sorry. Let's let Eric Schmidt's warfare think tank speak.
We create. And in creating, we live the legacy of those who dared to look beyond the horizon.
We live in a society that has checks and balances, that has rule of law, that you can hold people accountable, you can hold companies accountable.
Do we, though? Kind of a hard sell with everything going on right now, but okay.
That has rule of law, that you can hold people accountable, you can hold companies accountable. You know, there's no country like this in the world.
There's actually no country like this in the world that gets to operate with so much impunity.
Yeah.
On the international stage. Like, it's true there's no country like this in the world.
And it's so funny that they have, like, what's that guy's accent? He's like, there's no country like this in the world.
I think we have to preserve what really makes America unique.
All right, they're about to explain how they're continuing Kissinger's legacy.
Dr. Kissinger in 1957 created a special studies project on national security, economic growth, technology growth, essentially prepared us for the nuclear age and the conflicts we faced as a result. We face similar challenges now, perhaps larger ones. It's important, in my view, that America win.
So the next point he's going to make is all about how, like, we need to build, you know, these powerful technologies. We need to build powerful AI. And AI is so powerful, we need to make sure it has American values.
Yeah, which is we win.
We have a chance in the United States of inventing the future. The development of an alternative intelligence is a really big deal. We have to build this future with American values.
So the AI is going to love slavery? Like, what are American values even? Anti-intellectualism? Consumerism?
Yeah, we need AI with a hard ER.
We have a chance in the United States of inventing the future. We have to build this future with American values.
American values is the bacon burger goes on the Krispy Kreme donut.
Yeah, it is Cheez-Its in your Crunchwrap.
American values is basically nobody tells me what to do. Unipolarity or whatever.
Yeah, it's just like New York values. Like, hey, I'm bombing here.
Hey, I'm enabling a genocide over here.
That was a beautiful video. I'm inspired.
I'm inspired too. I'm inspired to create low-cost kamikaze drones.
But also, like, AI art with royalty-free inspirational music.
Technology, a path to a world more connected, more vibrant, more human than ever before.
I think this is a good place to bring up that op-ed Alex Karp wrote. You know, the video, the messages of the video, you know, the idea that we're at the brink of something and this is an important moment in history because of AI. That's like the same kind of message that Alex Karp, the CEO of Palantir, has been trying to sell. We need Silicon Valley to be, you know, on the forefront of the next military confrontation. So he writes in 2023 that we're in our Oppenheimer moment, and the creation of AI weapons is the same thing as enriching uranium at Los Alamos. So as artificial intelligence networks grow larger and more capable, it becomes ever more tempting to use them to build highly effective weapon systems, echoing the moral dilemma faced by the inventors of the nuclear bomb during World War II. So his main point is that we've come to a crossroad in the science of computing, a crossroad that connects engineering and ethics, where we will again have to choose whether to proceed with the development of technology whose power and potential we do not yet fully apprehend. And he uses apprehend instead of comprehend, like we haven't reined it in, we haven't been able to control it. And then he says, the choice we face is whether to rein in or even halt the development of the most advanced forms of artificial intelligence, which some may argue may threaten or someday supersede humanity, or to allow more unfettered experimentation with a technology that has the potential to shape the international politics of the century in the way nuclear arms shaped the last one.
So, like, artificial intelligence in the way that movies and TV have depicted it doesn't exist. Like, there's no sentience in this AI, but artificial intelligence in the sense that you have basically like all of these things being automated really quickly at speeds that humans could never compute, there always is a man behind the curtain. And the man behind the curtain is just Henry Kissinger. Like, it's just Alex Carr. Like,
yeah.
And that's what makes it dangerous. It's the people behind the curtain.
Yeah. But most of this article is like browbeating the engineers at Google that wanted the, you know, that resigned in protest from the company for being involved in Project Maven and for Google canceling the contract, and Palantir took it over. And he's like, my company cares about the U.S.
So Project Maven is the U.S. military's like AI tool.
The kinds of things that we talked about when we talked about Israeli targeting tech. Like, that's what Palantir is trying to do mostly by applying AI on the battlefield, basically like giving you a place to point your missile.
Yeah, it's the process images and video from drones to detect potential targets. And then, you know, those targets would get killed.
Yeah.
Should we talk about this panel that he was on at the AI Expo?
Oh, let's get to the panel. The main event. You got all the stars. You got Alex Karp, you know, really on his game, talking in three different tangents that he doesn't finish. Which...
like us.
Yeah, kind of like us, actually.
Very relatable.
And you got Eric Schmidt, former CEO of Google, and now the secret CEO of White Stork. You got David S. Cohen, who's the deputy director of the CIA, sitting right next to retired General Mark Milley, who's now a superstar in his own right, consulting and speaking for enormous fees right now. And he's really become a spokesperson for Palantir, kind of.
General Milley fought, has scars all over his body just to get Palantir implemented.
It's true.
Yeah, he's the former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, which is the country's highest ranking military officer. So you got the military, then you got the CIA deputy director. So you got military intelligence, and then you have Google and Palantir. So it's a panel of those four dudes, and mediating you have Andrew Ross Sorkin, which you may know if you watch CNBC. He's the Squawk Box guy.
Please welcome Dr. Eric Schmidt.
Hell yeah.
The chair of the Special Competitive Studies Project.
Woo!
The Honorable David S. Cohen, deputy director of the CIA.
Woo!
The 20th chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Mark Milley.
And
Dr. Alex Karp, co-founder and CEO of Palantir Technologies, joined in conversation with Mr. Andrew Ross Sorkin, anchor of CNBC's Squawk Box, journalist and author.
I want to start with General Milley.
Oh, great.
Oh, great. Oh, great, you say. It is great to see you.
Milley, is how much are you getting paid to be here and you don't even want to talk?
I want to talk about what you think the future of the battlefield itself looks like in the context of all of the different technologies that we're seeing outside of this room.
I love this. He goes into like a Merriam-Webster definition of war.
The nature of war is probably not going to change, although it could change. And the nature of war is about politics. It's about imposing your political will on your opponent by the use of organized violence. It involves friction, chance, death. That's the nature of war. But the character of war is how you fight, where you fight, when you fight, the tactics, the doctrine, the weapons, etc. And that changes frequently. But it only changes fundamentally once in a while. Today, we are in the most fundamental change in the character of war ever recorded in human history. Our ability to see, our ability to sense the environment. I got a GPS watch on one hand, I got a Fitbit on another, I got an iPhone in my pocket. There's more communication devices in this room than you can shake a stick at. Every single one of them is a sensor.
There are sensors all around us. We are easily located.
There are sensors everywhere. And this is why, you know, you always got to think about corporate surveillance in a military context, right? Because if you have a phone sensor, that is also a military sensor, right? Just because you don't think of it as a military sensor doesn't mean that you can't be sensed. And if you can be sensed, you can be targeted. And if you can be targeted, you could be killed. And he makes the point that if someone wanted to, they could, you know exactly where everyone's sitting because everyone has a phone, and they could target David Cohen, the CIA guy, and not him. That's how precise targeting is.
Yeah. And then they make a joke where it's like, Cohen was like, no, they'd go for you first. And Milley was like, I don't think so.
Yeah.
And the whole room laughs, you know.
Our ability to sense the environment, I got a GPS watch on one hand, I got a Fitbit on another, I got an iPhone in my pocket. Every single one of them is a sensor. Sophisticated powers, United States, China, Russia, can sense this room, and they know I'm sitting right next to Alex, and I'm sitting right next to David, and if someone wanted to, they could then hit with precision at range, and they could probably take out Cohen before me. And I wouldn't be hurt.
They'd go
and
for
he'd
you.
Be he'd be dead. They'd go for me first.
Yeah, they go.
For I don't
me.
Think so. So
he talks about how war is going to be even more deadly, even more lethal. Now they're going to be in urban areas because by the mid-century, most people are going to be living in these highly dense urban areas.
The operational environment is going to be incredibly lethal, way more lethal than people may come to realize today. It is probably going to be urban centric. So for hundreds of years, if not thousands, militaries have optimized their organizations and their tactics for battles in rural areas, maybe woods, maybe deserts, right? But we know by mid-century that of the 8 or 9 or 10 billion, however many there's going to be, 90% of them are going to live in highly dense urban areas, in mega cities. So how are you going to survive in an environment that has ubiquitous sensors, that's going to pick you up and see you, and they can hit you at speed? Well, first, there needs to be a lot of you. So think swarms. There needs to be a lot of cheap of you. So think cheap weapons and lots of them, right? Think about movement. It's way harder to hit a moving deer than a stationary deer. So you have to be in constant motion. What does that mean for the human being? And how are we going to do that with human biological adaptation to be constantly moving?
Anyway, so Eric Schmidt on this panel mainly talked, as The Guardian pointed out, about drones and automation in war and how autonomous weapons are going to be more and more prevalent and, you know, war is going to be more about software, right? And of course, as we mentioned, he has that AI drone company. He also kind of makes the point that with technology like these highly precise weapons and highly autonomous weapons, we may have a situation where wars as we know them will stop and we're going to have less war and less civilian casualties.
Highly precise weapons.
He kind of sounds like Glenn Greenwald.
What if they're the same guy?
The highly precise weapons controlled by AI in various ways that are highly autonomous may actually be such a deterrent that land wars as we know them will stop. It'll be impossible to use large numbers of ships to sort of use battleships in the equivalent to battle cities because the drones will take them out.
Like the ones that my company will sell.
Yeah. Highly, highly disposable.
So I think there's reasons to be optimistic that the technology, when well executed, will ultimately reduce in both less war and also less civilian casualties.
There ends up being like a kind of a passive-aggressive disagreement between Milley, the military guy, and Cohen, the CIA guy. Because Milley's whole point is that like war is going to get even deadlier and worse. And Cohen's like, well, technology is going to mean we could be even more precise. And so like because we can precisely target people, that means we're actually going to have less casualties. And like Milley is not having, he's like, no, wars are always going to be bad. They're not antiseptic. War is violent, vicious, brutal, bloody. Not going to be solved by technology. But David Cohen is like, oh, but the mass casualty events of the past, which is crazy, ironic, out of touch, highly inappropriate thing to say as we're unfolding a mass casualty event today, in the present. But anyway, he goes, the mass casualty events of the past will not really be the future of war. Like, that'll be the past, but because of, you know, all this precise technology, that's not going to be the future of war.
I mean, to get back to this question about the future of warfare and future of warfare in dense urban environments, autonomous but well-designed technology is able to quite precisely identify targets and hit those targets. Continued innovation in that space will assist in achieving what the General Alex is talking about, which is a more precise future of warfare. And I think there's a decent prospect that we will be in a world that some of what General Milley was talking about, of the just sort of the, right, you know, mass casualty events that have been the future of wars of the past will not be a future of the wars of the future.
I think, Andrew, we got to be careful, though, collectively, everybody, right? To think for a minute that war is going to be antiseptic, it's not. To think that it's going to be bloodless, it's not. To think that technology is going to resolve the horror of war, it's not.
There's clearly beef between the military and the CIA. It's funny to see it play out on stage.
You got to have the hard power in the international environment. It hasn't changed that much, right? So you got to have hard power, and your hard power has got to be capable, it's got to be big, it's got to be ready, and your opponent needs to know it. We, the United States, are going to have overwhelming military power. The Chinese are going to have to know it. The Chinese are going to have to know that we have the will to use it. And then deterrence will prevail. At least that's the theory of the case.
Go ahead, David.
Can I just add, we've been talking a lot about sort of hard military power here, but I think we also need to recognize that the future of warfare is also going to be fought not with things exploding, but in cyberspace. And
Things exploding too.
There will be things, yeah. But it's not just things exploding, right? I mean, and one of the things that I think we need to be mindful of is the in cyberspace, in cyber attacks.
Yes, cyber is going to be fundamental. There's new domains of war. All of that's true. But at the end of the day, war is violent, vicious, brutal, and bloody. And no one should ever have any illusion about that. And it's not going to be solved by technology.
Technology is not going to resolve the horror of war. And then, like, the rest of the guys on the panel, like, keep alluding to this idea that technology is the silver bullet. And actually, if we invest more in technology, it means that we're not going to have war as much. So it's this interesting thing we see play out on the stage because, you know, military intelligence kind of wants to have their cake and eat it too, because they want to say we got to invest in all of these sophisticated AI systems. Ostensibly, why? Because it's going to make war better. But also, don't expect war to be better. It's always going to be bad. Just because we have technology doesn't mean that we're going to stop killing people.
Yeah, yeah.
So you just talked about future wars being much more deadly and them happening in cities,
Yeah. Dense
cities. And we are seeing...
Seeing previews right now.
In Gaza.
And Alex Karp is like, oh yeah, we're not allowed to say what we're involved in Israel.
I mean, I'm sure it was going to come eventually, but it is funny that, like, he was asked something completely different and, like, couldn't help himself, and he had to bring up the university protests.
Yeah.
He called them, like, a pagan religion infecting our universities. He said this that got a lot of headlines, which is that the peace activists are actually the war activists because, are you ready? Because they're chanting pro-North Korea mantra.
The peace activists are actually the pro-war activists, and we're the peace activists. You have to scare your adversary, and you have to be willing to act.
Why do you say the peace activists are war activists?
Because if you're the useful idiot of Iran and China begging, literally there are people on college campuses saying, doing a pro-North Korea mantra.
I haven't heard that because it's pretty irrelevant.
Yeah, I haven't heard that either. Yeah, I don't know. What is the mantra?
I mean, North Korea does stand with Palestine in solidarity, but, like, the idea that that's what the character of the protest is.
I think what he's referring to is there was, like, a Maoist slogan that was written on a chalkboard in Heinz Hall, where it said, like power comes from the barrel of a gun.
Or maybe he just knows something we don't, because remember, Palantir, you know, is probably listening on everyone's phone. So maybe there was, like, a private conversation between two campus activists.
Yeah, it was like a group chat.
Whatever. I mean, this is all expected from a guy like Alex Karp. You know, everyone supporting Palestine is Hamas. You guys are terrorists, blah, blah, blah.
If you think that creates peace... You are literally, why would Hamas ever give up? They have you marching for them. They're never going to give up. You are an infection inside of our society, and they are the reason they're not going to give up.
He's like, why would Hamas ever stop? As if that's what inspires Hamas. Samantha Rosen, praying for me in the quad. That's why I fight. That's why I get up in the morning and fight Israel.
And he also does the, like, you know, these protests are anti-Jewish thing, which is, like, you know, so tired, been debunked a million times, but, like, it's really all they have.
There's so many Jews there. They're, like, literally having a Seder and praying, and he's like, you pagans.
He says, what does he say? He says, the reason that people are protesting against the Jews is because they're successful. And it's like, is that what's happening?
And then, of course, I've been calling out the thin, corrasive, cancerous ideology that regresses below Judaism, Islam, and Christianity, and any form of Western thought that is now a pagan religion infecting our universities, because it's dangerous to America. It is dangerous to allow discrimination on our college campuses simply because the people are being discriminated against are viewed as successful.
He's like, the successful people are being marginalized in our society.
It's like people hate Israel because they're successful. It's like, I'm pretty sure people are protesting against Israel because they're killing. Like, I don't know if it has to do with success. Like, he's trying to make it a race thing.
He twists it in like so many different ways. It's like hard to keep track of what he actually thinks.
Like, it's hard to tell if he genuinely believes what he's saying or if he's just doing, you know, propaganda tactics.
I think he believes what he's saying, but it's not coherent to me. He's like trying to denigrate them, and he's making these campus protests seem so dangerous to our country, you know, saying like, what should we do about them? Like, maybe you should really send in the National Guard and arrest all these people for putting up tents.
You are an infection inside of our society, and they are the reason they're not going to give up. If you want to stop these people, you have to be willing to be fierce.
You know, I think if Alex Karp wasn't CEO of Palantir, like, he'd be a guy going down to like UCLA and punching a sign of like, save the Palestinian children, and throwing eggs at the protesters. Like, I think that's what he really wants to do.
Oh my God, that's completely what he wants to do. He wants to drone them all.
And I mean, the interesting thing is like how much power he gives to the Columbia students. He's like, we're not going to be able to fight if we have these campus protesters. We're losing an ideological battle by having protests for Palestine.
We kind of just think these things that are happening across college campuses especially are like a sideshow. No, they are the show. Because if we lose the intellectual debate, you will not be able to deploy any army in the West ever.
That's right.
We really have to be careful not to let our adversaries, you know, win the intellectual debate. Because there will be no battlefield, there will be no successful engagement if we just allow their attempts to corrode our culture to go intellectually unchecked.
Given the moral questions that this is all creating and the collateral damage we're talking about in the future of what we think war looks like, is it's not just going to be a battle on the battlefield. It's going to be a battle for the hearts and minds of the world, because there are going to be images of others taken on phones everywhere. We lived through this with Vietnam when it was on TV, but now it's on TikTok.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think the future of information operations and, you know, and trying to dominate the information space is going to be what we have seen in the past, and it's going to be supercharged by some of the technologies we've been talking about, AI in particular.
These images will appear on TikTok, so he's like kind of also making a case for censorship, where it's like people shouldn't see any images that might make them not support the cause.
Yeah, but it's too late. It's like it's out of your control.
I know, but what's scary is that these people are realizing, like, you know, images get taken on the phone, they get uploaded to TikTok, and then the entire generation of Americans are like, okay, we don't fuck with Israel's war. Then you have people like Karp and Milley, like, recognizing that as a threat to their war propaganda. It means that they're going to try to combat that. They're realizing that they have to do more to win the quote-unquote hearts and minds. And as Karp says, this is an ideological, you know, war or whatever.
Exactly.
So, sad. Really don't want people like Milley and Karp and Schmidt and Cohen battling for my heart and my mind. I would rather they left my heart and my mind alone. And Alex Karp isn't the only one that, you know, stood with Israel on this panel. I mean, obviously, it's a military guy, a CIA guy, and two big tech CEOs from America. Like, obviously, we're all pro-Israel here. But Milley also, you know, goes on a little rant about how Israel has a right to defend itself. And his defense of Israel basically boils down to, like, war is just a horrible thing. And, you know, you're just going to have high levels of collateral damage and there's no way around it. And, you know, Israel basically can't be blamed for these high civilian casualty numbers. And then he also says, like, you need to get in there and get it done and get it done fast.
Israel has a right to defend itself. Israel has every right to defend itself. War is a horrible thing. I had a lot of years in combat, been shot at, blown up, the whole nine yards, right? It's a horrible, brutal, vicious thing. And unfortunately, because the character of war is going to be in dense urban areas, is going to have very high levels of collateral damage. There's almost no way around it. But if there's any morality at all, you need to get into it, achieve your political objectives, get it done fast, and get it over with.
Yeah, and it's like you were part of the Joint Chiefs of Staff during the war in Afghanistan.
Yeah, and yeah. Like, so where was that quickness in that forever war? It's almost like he's saying, like, Israel just needs to, like, nuke it, like, one day, get it done fast, instead of, like, drawing it out and, like, creating a public debate and, like, looking bad in the news day after day. Anyway, the other point he makes about Israel's genocide is that as Americans, we have really no right to criticize because we did bad stuff too.
Oh, yeah. He's bringing up all these points from, like, November discourse.
One comment on this collateral damage thing, and this may or may not be controversial, I don't know, but before we all get self-righteous about what Israel's doing, and I feel horrible for the innocent people in Gaza that are dying, but we shouldn't forget that we, the United States, killed a lot of innocent people in Mosul and Raqqa, that we, the United States, killed 12,000 innocent French civilians. And here we are on the 80th anniversary of Normandy, on the prep fires for Normandy. We destroyed 69 Japanese cities, not including Hiroshima and Nagasaki. We slaughtered people in massive numbers, innocent people who had nothing to do with their government, men, women, and children.
Is that a good argument, though? Like, we also did that.
It's like, and then the international community came together and said, maybe we shouldn't punish civilian populations.
I think, was it him? He made the point that, like, wars need a cause, and, like, the support for your war will be directly proportional to how good your cause is.
Yeah. Yeah, that was him.
It's all directly proportional to the cause for which you're fighting.
Then he makes the point that, like, populations don't do well with long wars. And that's why they need to be quick. But it's like, yeah, because then they realize the cause was fake. Like, the more time passes, the more they realize that it's actually a fake cause. As soon as you start a war, it starts a clock where you're racing against your population, realizing that they've been lied to.
It's all directly proportional. A society, especially democratic societies, it's all directly proportional to the cause for which you're fighting. It also is proportional to time. Democratic societies do not do well with long wars. So they need to get fought with a purpose, a political purpose. The political leadership has to explain that to the people. There has to be a mobilization of that. And it has to be done in the fastest amount of time humanly possible. Speed is important.
Okay, so that's his main critique of Israel. Just do it faster.
Yeah. And that's kind of the game of that's happening with the U.S. and Israel. Like, Israel is constantly saying, like, oh, yeah, just give us a few more months.
And, yeah, like, and the U.S. is like, get it done.
Yeah.
We're actually totally cool with genocide. What we're not totally cool with is the news cycle that it's affecting over
here.
It's
how long it's taking you. I love the part. Oh, can we talk about the microphone, the tech problem?
Oh, yes. Let's see. I think it's right here.
So first I want to thank everybody.
I think we got to make sure that his microphone is working if we could. Can we get a handheld for Eric, maybe? I don't know if...
It is funny that the one guy that's having the biggest tech issue is the guy hosting the whole thing. Like, this is his think tank. They're all here at his invitation.
He should have a mic, goddammit. He should have a lectern.
Microphone shows up. Yep. Thank you very much.
Technology.
Hello. Perhaps I'm in a dead zone.
We are at a technology conference, and so yes, having the microphones work is just a small part of it, but
I love how Sorkin fills the time.
You have to improvise. And I think that David is going to be helping Eric with a little bit of that improvisation.
They give him a handheld. And the handheld doesn't work either. So the CIA director is taking off his lav and giving it to Eric Schmidt.
Hang tight as we make it through the technical difficulties. Go for it. You know, people now use the tiny mics in social media. So
I know.
Look cool.
It's always great when the CIA helps you out. You are here to help.
And he would know. After all, Google was funded partially by InQtel, the CIA's venture capital arm.
Oh, my God. When that moment happened, what was your reaction at home?
Now, I mean, I really rolled my eyes because it's so cute and relatable, but they are literal murderers.
Yeah.
And then they ask him about artificial general intelligence potentially controlling a drone and, like, what would a drone have to do if the AGI has to, like, make a decision, but there's a civilian in the way.
If we ever get to full artificial general intelligence and the drone has to make the decision,
so,
and there's a civilian in the way,
so,
and how those decisions are going to get made.
So this is roughly the equivalent of the self-driving car hitting the old lady or the child. And the correct answer is hit neither. And so you're going to have to come up with some rules like this. Today, the law of war basically says that a human has to be in control, or the current Pentagon term is effective human control, right? And I think that will work just fine until war speeds up. Another example is the AI system. You're on a ship, and the AI system says there is a missile coming at you. You don't see it. You have 26 seconds to decide to destroy it and start a world war, or you're dead. So this compression of time is the one thing we don't have good answers on. Another example, in my military work, I was invited to see a demonstration of a simulation of an ICBM attack. And they must have been doing this simulation since the 1960s. And it takes like 20 minutes for an ICBM to get from the source to an American target. So they have 3 minutes to wake up the president. They have 3 minutes for the president to be informed as to what to do. They have 3 minutes for the president to say, okay, press the button, and then have the counterattack, right? That's war on human time. But what happens when it happens in a second? And we don't have a good answer for that.
We don't have a good answer for that. Okay, great. Long way of saying, I don't know.
Yeah. No, it's a long way of saying, hey, wouldn't it be great if we outsourced all of our decision-making to AI? Even though, like, we're nowhere near the AI spitting out honest answers on a Google search.
All you're doing is getting people ready for this idea of AGI, which there's no evidence exists, and it's probably never going to exist. It's always going to be humans faking AGI. If AGI ever happens, it's going to be a human faked AGI.
Yeah, but this is why you need the ceremony and the pomp and circumstance for the AI expo, because you need to pretend that these machines can do all these things and we can outsource our decision making to it.
Totally. And like we talked about in the Lavender episode, like, it's already happening in Israel. They're shirking responsibility to this quote unquote AI program, automatically creating targeted kill lists, and there's a real human cost there. And it's, like, so bizarre to hear people talk about war like this. Like, oh, the future of war. Like, what's it going to look like in these dense urban areas? Meanwhile, like, I can open my phone right now and watch it happen in a dense urban area because of this quote-unquote precise, targeted AI system, which is just killing so many people.
Yeah, and the interesting thing is, like, according to Haskins, the Guardian writer, whenever anybody was asked in these panels about, like, what's going on in Gaza, and could we, like, acknowledge some kind of responsibility of, you know, supposedly outsourcing our decision making, everybody's kind of, like, embarrassed by those questions. They're so out of place because everybody's coming to this as, like, no, we're, like, AI hype people. We're not really thinking here about collateral damage or any kind of, like, real-world consequences. Like, this is a job for us. This is a work conference. Like, these questions are kind of silly. And it's like, but no, it's happening right now.
Yeah, they don't want to think about the targets, the victims. And the Guardian reporter that went to this panel said that after the CART panel, they left the room and they were like kind of stunned and like, you know, a little bit like, whoa, I don't know how to process that. Quote, all around me, I overheard upbeat conversation between hundreds of people who had just heard the same things I had. Easygoing comments about lunch, travel, or the next panel. I felt like we were living in totally different realities. But anyway, that was definitely the main... That was definitely the most interesting panel of the two-day event, of the two-day AI Warfare Expo. The other thing that I found funny from the Guardian reporter was they wrote about how, quote, on the evening of the first day, Palantir had a social event with free drinks. The only two options were IPAs, and I had one called The Corruption. It was the worst beverage I've ever had in my life.
But it's also a British writer. Maybe they're coming and judging our beer. Don't you like a warm beer that tastes like tea? I don't know. The most popular beers in England are all like kind of flat, room temperature, a lot of head.
You go, girl. Defend your country.
Yeah. I'll defend the Corruption IPA, even though I haven't tasted it. So what are these people like who come to the conference? Well, the Guardian writer ran into a man and said, I asked what he thought of the panel. Smiling meekly, he said it was interesting to hear Millie describe the Second World War that way, okay? And then he said he works in nuclear weapons research at Los Alamos Laboratory. And then he said, I just thought of something. I'm the new Oppenheimer.
Oh my God.
It's like everybody wants to be Oppenheimer.
They don't understand that it doesn't mean you're a movie star. It means you're a killer.
This is the like type of guy that's going to this conference. Like they're like, I'm the Oppenheimer.
No, I'm the Oppenheimer.
And in this world, everybody can be Oppenheimers because, you know, it's based on hype.
Yeah, I'm jealous of this Guardian reporter. It honestly sounds like a fun convention to have gone to, this AI Expo. I think we should go next year.
Yeah, next time there's one, we're going next year. Yeah, we're getting press passes.
The other thing we can mention about this convention is that it was like kind of coexisting with the Ash Carter Exchange on Innovation and National Security. And so basically the whole event was like honoring this dead former defense secretary, Ash Carter, whose like main, I guess, contribution to, you know, America was that he really recognized the vital role that technology could play in national security. He was one of Obama's secretaries of defense. He also worked at the Pentagon under the Clinton administration, pushing the military to be more like, quote unquote, like forward leaning. Like that was his legacy, to basically expand the definition of national security to technology, not just tanks and guns, also technology. That was basically Ash Carter's legacy.
And yeah, his initiatives were like, how do we make the DoD more attractive to people who work in the tech industry? You know, raising salaries, freezing eggs. The free freezing eggs was under Ash Carter. If you get a job at the DoD, if you're a female, you can get your eggs frozen for free. And that, you know, that's kind of a carrot that they offer to people who would otherwise be working in Silicon Valley in companies where they would provide that kind of service. And you know, he was all about making these partnerships with Silicon Valley, building research centers there. And this is, you know, his dream has come to fruition. All these people together in a room in D.C.
Would you ever freeze your eggs?
I thought about it. I don't know. I talked to my friend who's a gynecologist and she said it's like kind of a ripoff. I've heard like so many different things about whether or not it works. But I do know several women who've had children from a frozen egg, but it's quite expensive. You have to take hormones, you have to like inject yourself every day. I'm just not into that kind of
oh
shit.
Yeah, definitely not.
Yeah, and then it doesn't necessarily work and you have to like pay a yearly fee. There's like a storage fee for them too, and you end up paying, I don't know, close to six figures for it, unless you join the DoD and then it's all free. You get a free baby out of it.
There were a bunch of other events, too. Like there was an interview with the head of the Defense Innovation Unit where he basically said that we need to experiment a lot with AI and take more risks with AI.
You got to play offense. And the only way to play offense in the world of AI is with AI. And so right. That means that we have to responsibly lean in hard. experiment, try things, fail sometimes. We have to do that because the only way to win is by winning. We got to get better at taking process risk, financial risk, reputational risk, because we might look stupid if something doesn't go well, which is, by the way, all those kinds of risks that we in Silicon Valley, when we're not wearing ties, are good at taking.
There was also an interesting panel with just like a bunch of military generals. I don't know if general is actually the official rank. It was a bunch of military guys in those uniforms with all the pins. You know, I'm assuming they're all like...
Yeah, they had pins on.
There was like head of the Space Force, head of the Air Force, Navy. It's like all the military people.
Space Force?
Oh, yeah, baby.
The head of the Space Force? That's awesome. He must have the most fun job. I want that job.
The two themes of that panel were basically, one, we need more funding.
On-time funding matters. You know, and this is not a shot at Congress, but I guess it is.
The other main point of that was warfare is going to be all about human-machine teaming. Take a shot every time this guy says human-machine teaming.
Yeah, their vision of the world might be driving you to drink.
Human-machine teaming will be, as a general enterprise, human-machine teaming can be a competitive advantage. A lot of times we hear AI, it's going to replace, or it's going to be machines versus humans, when actually there's an opportunity for us, as Jim said, it's still a human endeavor. But let's maximize what the humans can do by ensuring that the machines can do what the machines can do and make each other better. I believe central to our Air Force's future is human-machine teaming. So we're working on the automation. As we're looking at leaning into human-machine teaming, thinking about the way we've done our mission totally differently.
And here's a speech by Secretary of the U.S. Air Force, Frey Kendall, who wrote a book for DARPA called The Future of Warfare, but didn't make it public because he didn't want China to read it.
I wrote a book for DARPA. It was a book titled The Future of Warfare. And I wrote it as a classified book because I didn't want China to read it. Things in that book are coming true. And it's all about, in one word, autonomy, automation. We're moving forward in space and in the air to increase the use, particularly what we call artificial intelligence. I'm not crazy about that terminology. I prefer to use automation because what we're actually doing in most cases is automating functions that would have been performed by humans. The book is classified. If you want a copy and you have a secret zipper address and you want to send me that, and you can tell me you have, explain how you have a need to know, I'll get your copy.
Yeah. DM me. He's like, slide into my DMs. And
I'll mail you a copy. Get it. There's all of that going on at this beautiful event, and there was only one ethics and human rights panel. So the Guardian reporter talks about how they went there with Jack. What's Jack's name?
Jack Paulson.
And how after the ethics and human rights panel, Jack Paulson, the reporter, stood up at the first opportunity for the Q&A. Quote, he talked about the provocative remarks made throughout the conference about, quote, exporting AI into places like Gaza. Voice shaking, mm-hmm. He mentioned CARP unabashedly supporting the ongoing killings in Gaza and said that CARP's comments about winning the debate were clearly a euphemism for crushing dissent. Jack asked, could the panel respond to any of this? Remember, this is the Ethics and Human Rights panel. But the moderator decided to let everyone else ask their questions and let the panelists choose what to answer. No one answered Jack's question.
Damn.
That's a huge pet peeve of mine when they get all the questions in and then not all of them get answered. That happens a lot at the World Economic Forum panels too, where like someone will ask a question and then the moderator will be like, all right, do we have any other questions? And they'll get seven other questions and then, you know, only two of them get answered.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Genius, if your job is to make sure the presenters look good. Another thing that happened at this event was that two congressmen got awards. We had Senator Mark Warner, self-declared good friend of Eric Schmidt.
Senator Mark R. Warner is awarded the Ash Carter Award for Innovation and National Security.
Thank you for this tremendous award. It is a great honor to receive it. If there's been one value add I've tried to think about is recognizing that strategic competition, national security, goes beyond simply who has the most tanks, guns, ships, and planes. It really is, particularly with an adversary or potential adversary like China, a technology competition. I am very proud to accept this award, and I'm very grateful for this recognition. Thank you very much.
And then we had Representative Mike Gallagher, who is most well known for his orchestrating of the measure that will ban TikTok.
In recognition of his distinguished service to the nation and steadfast devotion to assuring America's primacy in national security innovation, the Honorable Michael J. Gallagher is awarded the Ash Carter Award for Innovation and National Security, most recently exemplified in his orchestrating of the measure that will protect our nation and millions of Americans from the current dangers of platforms controlled by nations of concern.
Mike Gallagher in the last cycle got $36,000 from Google, $33,000 from Palantir, $22,000 from APAC. Just thought I'd throw that in there. Mark Warner also got $22,000 from Google in the last cycle. The people they're really representing, Eric Schmidt and Alex Karp, in the federal legislature of the United States of America. So these people are getting rewarded for being shills. Of course, this whole, you know, AI warfare convention, the human cost of war is just pretty much unrepresented. It's all about precision technology or whatever, but no one is talking about, you know, the targets, the victims, obviously. There was apparently one Red Cross booth.
Oh, yeah. They even had in the booth, like shelter. It says, so only one booth, a small immersive exhibit with tall gray walls, seemed concerned about the ordinary people affected by war. It was run by the International Committee of the Red Cross. A door-like opening brought me into an emergency shelter with a young family caught in a conflict zone. There was a small couch with an open sleeping bag on top. Yeah, that seems like so surreal, that like physical exhibit was at this conference. The Guardian writer says, like, everybody was just like kind of confused by it.
Yeah, it's like, what does this have to do with anything?
What does this have to do with me being Oppenheimer?
The exhibit was small, but in a conference largely celebrating the military-industrial complex, it stuck out. It felt like a plea for someone, anyone, to consider the victims of war. Outside, I talked to a Red Cross employee, Thomas Glass. He was attentive and engaged, but seemed tired. He said that he had just spent several weeks in southern Gaza setting up a field hospital and supporting communal kitchens. I asked how people at the conference had been responding to his exhibit. Glass said that most people he had met had been open-minded, but some asked why the Red Cross was at the conference at all. They weren't aggressive about it, he said. They just genuinely did not understand.
Yeah, and that kind of sums up like the twisted reality that's going on at this AI conference. We're here for AI hype. This is our job.
We're here to be the aggressors. We're not here to think about this in like an academic, well-rounded way. We're here to think about this from the perspective of the West, right? As Alex Karp often puts it, like, we're here to defend Western democracy, blah, blah, blah. I mean, obviously, this whole thing is being put on for, you know, the military-industrial complex. It's not claiming to be some sort of objective convention.
It's a celebration of the military and Silicon Valley together in one convention center in the middle of D.C. I think that's it, right?
I think so. See you at next year's AI Warfare Conference.
We will be going next year.
Oh, yeah. And we wish, you know, much success to Eric Schmidt's drone startup company. I think an AI kamikaze drone is a great idea. Please let us in.
Time passed and things changed. Reverting back to our daily program, stuck in our ways. Drones. Some water, something came over me. Way too high to simmer down. Might as well overheat. Too close to comfort. As blood rush my favorite vein, heartbeat racing like a junkie's. I just need you to warm me. Am I asking too much? Let me put the head. Let me put the head in. It is okay. She said it's okay.
about money, kick your feet up. Watch you a comedy, take a shit, then roll some weed up. Go hit you a lick, go fuck on a bitch, don't go to work today. Cop you a fit or maybe some kicks and make you.
Foreign is not kerattles, rossify exit, no time for battles.
Well, I'm never inspecting. Wake up in the morning, think about money, kick your feet up. Watch you a comedy, hold up. We all woke up, trying to tune to the daily news. Looking for confirmation, hoping election wasn't true. All of us worried, all of us buried in our feelings deep. None of us married to his proposal, make us feel cheap. Stale and sad, distraught and mad, tell a neighbor about it. Bet they agree, parade the streets with your voice proudly. Time passed and things change, reverting back to our daily program. Stuck in our ways, drones.
We, the United States, killed a lot of innocent people in Mosul and Raqqa. We, the United States, killed 12,000 French civilians. We destroyed 69 Japanese cities. We slaughtered people in massive numbers. Innocent people who had nothing to do with their government. Men, women, and children.
I need some water. Something came over me. Way too hot to simmer down. Might as well overheat. Too close to comfort. That's blood rush, my favorite thing. Heartbeat racing like a junkie's. I just need you to warm me. Am I asking too much? Let me put the head.